doing the book of Habakkuk. We're up to what's called the second chapter of the ninth Pasuk. And Navi had been speaking about the destruction of the Babylonian Empire. And the Navi continues and says in Pasuk Tet, Hoi botzeya betzara leveito. Woe to the person who forcefully takes other people's money, which is ultimately bad to his own home. So he's thieving, he's plundering others, but the truth is that he's endangering his home in doing so, because he's acquiring many enemies. Lasum bamarom kino lehinatzeil mikafra. And he's assuming that by taking others' wealth, he will be able to build great fortifications for himself. Lasum bamarom kino, so to speak, he's making his nest way up high. He assumes that in taking others' money, he will be able to protect himself and make his home up in the heavens, so to speak, protect himself way up high. Lihinatzel mikafra, to save himself from the hand of all evil, of anything bad. And the Navi says that's not the way it works. Quite the contrary. He's just acquiring enemies. Ya'atz taboshet leveitecha ketzot amim rabim vechotei nafshecha. In truth, your plan has brought shame to your home. When you take the wealth of others, that will ultimately be the shame of your home, because the nations bear their enmity towards you. And then they will come back, and Kitzotamim Rabim, the fact that you cut down so many nations was Bechotei Nafshecha. That's really sinning against your own soul, so to speak. You're committing suicide, because they're going to come back, and they're going to come back to haunt you, which is a repeated theme throughout history. Ki Evin Mikir Tizak Vechafitz Meyeitz Yanena. The stones in your home all wail out, and their declaration is that they are not yours. They're stolen property. And so too the beams in your home, they respond to the stones, so to speak, and they say, we've come through plundering, we've come through the murder of other people, we've come through lawful activities. Hoi bonei il bidamim. Woe to he who builds a city on blood. Bechonen kiya beavla. And establishes his city, his capital, on iniquity, on hurting others. So this, by the way, Pasuk Yud Aleph is a pasuk that's often quoted. Even mikir tizak. The stones of the walls call out. It's, so to speak, everything here is bearing testimony against the person. It's obvious. Over here, the Navi is describing as though the stones of the walls themselves bear testimony to his wicked activities, and the beams of the house, they respond in turn also to the stones of the wall, and they say, yeah, we're also stolen property. We were also taken by force. And then the Navi says, woe to he who builds his cities on plundering others and on the blood of others. Yeah.
I have a question in regards to how this relates to us as the Jewish people, as far as from what I understand it, that how we've come back to the land of Israel has been much, much more moral than any other nation. And it's like, this is our land, this is the land that God's given us in the Torah, but I can't really say for sure, because I don't know, I wasn't there, but I've heard from people who are very Zionist and very pro to Israel that there are cases where we have forced Arabs out of their homes and taken their land. And
war crimes as well.
My initial reaction was just like to say, no, that's not true, no, that stuff is true, but it seems though, from this is saying, if for the Babylonians it's wrong for them to take things by force, it's also, this isn't the same thing, because it's our land, but it seems like from what this is saying, like we should try to exhaust every other means other than forcing people out of their homes. So even though this isn't their land, it's the land that God gave us. Like,
I think over here he's talking about his imperialistic tendencies. He's talking about taking from other nations to build his own home, going and plundering other people to expand his own wealth. I don't think the Navi would have an issue with him if there was a rebellion or if there were people who were trying to take his land and he fought them and took it back. I don't think the Navi would have an issue with that. The way we are taught from the beginning of the book of Bereishis is that there is a certain division of the world among different countries, and the Egyptians have their land which they built, and the Moabites have their land, and throughout history we find that people are not taken to task for fighting to protect their own land or take back their own land, to the point where the Torah warns us that if we leave people over here, they'll try to take it back from us. The Torah also goes to great pains to describe to us how the land of Israel was purposely taken by Canaan, who was supposed to be a slave to Shem, and initially it was Shem's descendants, and only then was plundered by them, and that Avram really had a lawful right to it, going back to Noach, to the divisions of the land that go back then, if we're already going to go back historically, whose land it is. And even then, they had an option to leave, meaning they didn't have to get killed. They also had an option to stay and accept the Noahide laws in the times of Joshua. They had an option. They were given three options. What do you want to do? Fight, leave, or stay and accept the Noahide laws. Today, it's a good question. There was a big discussion among the rabbis back then whether we should have done what we did. That's now becomes a historical question, but if you read the response from 100 years ago, there was a big discussion about what's halachically correct, what our approach should be. It's interesting that the government, although it is secular, and the government is not taking into account what the halacha says, in many ways the government really went in line with the more stringent opinions of halacha, at least the government's professed position. I'm not saying there weren't stories of war crimes and soldiers didn't do things that were against the government's position. But technically, the government's proclaimed position happens to be in line with the more stringent opinions. Even a book came out a few years ago about the activities of the Mossad, and it shows how the history of the Mossad, it doesn't kill a person for having killed. They might take him into prison for that. But the only time the Mossad acts to kill people is when they view that these people are going to continue endangering lives. Meaning, even though the person might have killed 20 people already, if right now he's leading a peaceful life and he's not a danger, so then the Mossad is not going to work hard to kill him. The policy is you only kill those who endanger the future, which happens to be very much in line with the halacha for our state today. Meaning, right now we're not in a position, we don't have a court, and we don't have a king, we don't have a situation where we could actually go out and just kill people for what they killed in the past. I mean, the Noahide laws, maybe they can, maybe there are situations where we can, but technically our right to kill is very much stems from self-defense. Very much stems from, if they're going to kill me, I'd better kill them. Now, how do you expand that? How do you apply that? That's a good question. Meaning, it could very well be that if the prime minister were a person who was an observant Jew, we would take a much stronger position against the Palestinians and against anyone who shoots a missile at us. You know, they are endangering our lives. But what?
Nepal, they do it again.
Right, unfortunately, right. So that's a different question. But the general attitude, historically, of the state, the official attitude, was an attitude which I think is very much in line with the halacha, even though I don't think that was their point. You know, it might have stemmed from Christian morals, it might have stemmed from global pressure, it might have stemmed from all kinds of things. But at the end of the day, look at all our wars. All wars were of self-defense. He's talking to the Babylonian king, whose wars were about amassing wealth. It was going into another country, destroying their lives, destroying their homes, in order to amass his own greater wealth. That's not, I don't think you can compare. That's never been our position, and the world knows that's never been our position. That's why the world doesn't really care if we sign the Non-Proliferation Treaty on the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Act. Why is the world nervous about Iran, and the world was never nervous about us? Because everyone knows, like Golda Meir said, If we put down our weapons, we'll be dead. If they put down their weapons, there'll be peace. And everyone knows that's our history and that's our position. It's not only a theoretical position. Were there war crimes? I don't know. I'm not denying that it could be. I'm not saying it was. There are all kinds of videos today coming out of Arabs describing how there weren't really war crimes, but their Arab neighbors kept telling them, Syria and Lebanon and from all around, they got word, you better say that they did A, B, and C to you, because this way the world will come to your defense. And it backfired, because when they started saying that women were raped and that this was what happened, so the exact opposite happened. Their Arab neighbors didn't really do much. The stories didn't have any legal basis. But the Arabs who heard it packed their bags and ran. When the Arabs heard that this is what the Jewish soldiers did, that was one of the great causes for Arabs to flee. The rumors that they themselves said about. And those there are, you can find it on YouTube. They found Arabs who testified that they were told, they were advised by Egypt and the other enemies to go around claiming that we had done war crimes, that we went house to house killing people and things like that. And because it couldn't be validated truthfully, and yet the other Arabs believed it, so they didn't get what they hoped to gain, and we benefited from it. Now, I'm not saying that's the truth either. You know, you could pay an Arab to say something on a video and videotape him too. I'm not saying, I don't know what really happened there.
You're talking about 1948?
I'm talking about 1948, and I'm also talking about when we conquered East Jerusalem. 67, yeah. I don't know. The Navi, at any rate, is taking the Babylonian Empire. He's taking them to task over plundering other nations. Hallo, hine meyet Adonai tzivaot. ויגעו עמים בידי אש ולאומים בידי ריק יעפו. הלא הנה מאת השם צבקות. The Navi says he will be paid back, and don't think that it's a coincidence. Even though in the eyes of history there are logical reasons why these nations will come back to haunt him. But Hashem says the truth is that I am paying him back, and this is the answer to Habakkuk. Habakkuk says, how is he so successful? And Hashem says, I will pay him back. That's part of the answer to Habakkuk. V'yige'u amim b'deyesh, and the nations will work hard with a lot of fire, meaning all the force that the Babylonian Empire has amassed will ultimately go up in flames. The other understanding here is the nations will work hard and they're going to be strong as fire. Ule umim, and the nationalities will work hard. Bederik yi'afu means they will tire, they will work hard, and they're going to take everything he toiled for and they're going to make it into worthless. All of his toils, bederik, will be turned back into nothing, yi'afu. From their hard work, they're going to work hard to destroy everything he built. So Hashem's saying, you think you've outsmarted everyone. You think you've overpowered everyone. I will bring you down to your needs. Ki yitimalei ha'aretz ladat et kevod Adonai kamayim yichasu al yam. The reason is because ki timalei ha'aretz. And Eretz very often is a reference to the land of Israel, and Eretz could also mean the people of the land of Israel. And so the Navi says, the people of Israel, Kitimalei Ha'aretz, the land will fill, and here it's a reference to the land of Israel, to the people of the land of Israel. They will be filled, Ladat et Kavod Hashem, with the knowledge of Hashem's honor. Kamayim yichasu al yam, just as the water covers the sea. And Hashem, once he sees them, chozer b'tshuva, Hashem will then avenge all that happened to them. It this pasuk is we have a similar pasuk in Isaiah, right? Now it's interesting. The Navi describes the water covering the sea. The water is the sea. What does it mean? The water covering the sea. So from here we see that the word yam could often mean the floor of the sea, not only the water of the sea. Yam, the Rishonim already write in other places in Bereishis that yam is the area of the sea. It's not the sea itself. Now, why is that so important? Because we have a Gemara that says that the Tcheles is domed layam. And we always assume that means Tcheles is similar to the water of the sea. And those who are producing the blue dye that they have today, they want to claim that Tcheles domed layam is a reference to the creature that the Chilazon that they use to produce the Tcheles lives in a shell that looks exactly like the sea floor. And they want to say that that's what the Gemara says, that the creature lives in a shell that if you look at the floor of the sea, you can't tell the difference between the rocks on the floor and that shell. Where it habitates, it looks identical to the floor of the sea. So on this point, they happen to be right, that the yam in Tanakh is very often the floor of the sea, not the sea itself.
But the tchelet, we're referring to the tchelet, no? The color of the tchelet.
That's how Rashi and the Rambam learn, right?
When Rashi and Rambam say
that the tchelet is...
yam means the color,
right?
Is like the yam. And you're saying there are those that say it's like the shell of the chalazon.
Right. Right. What you're saying is the simple pshat. I agree with you.
That creature apparently also produces color that matches what Rashi and Rambam.
Rashi says it's black. Rambam says it's blue. It says it's like the sea, which is like the sky, which the Rambam learns is in the middle of the day when it's a beautiful blue, and Rashi learns it's the middle of the night when it's black. That's why we have black stripes on our talis, like Rashi, to commemorate the Tcheles.
Isn't everything kind of black at night?
That's a good point. I guess the sky, though, is the greatest description of what's black. Again, these are Kabbalistic concepts. The truth is, to start saying, this is like this, and this is like that, and this is like that, and that's like the Kisei HaKavod, right? You see, you're talking something Kabbalistic. This is a Medrash. And the Gemara is using terminology that indicates that there are concepts being given over here. It's not just about a color. On the simple level, yeah, they're talking about a color. But there's a deeper thought here about comparing the Tcheles to the sea, to the heaven, to the Kisei HaKavod.
Rashi thought that the string color was black?
Blackish, yeah.
Blackish, bluish?
Maybe black. Very, very, very dark blue, like the black of night.
Okay.
It's, so...
But he uses the word shachor, though? Rashi?
I don't remember. Hoi Mashkit. I'm with you.
So it talks about Kavod Hashem combining Yichasu Alayam. Does that mean like completely filled? Because I mean, like, you'd say the water completely covers the floor of the sea. And like, what is the
meaning?
It's going to be complete.
The land will be filled. That's the beginning of the pasuk. Timalei ha'aretz. The land will be filled. Ladat et Hashem.
And this is something that it doesn't really. I get the impression that it's talking about something that, from our perspective, would have been in the past. It doesn't really seem like this.
Right.
Happened.
That's what we would think. But
I'm thinking of Isaiah, because it's like Isaiah definitely talks, seems like it's talking about the times of the Messiah, but here maybe it's just saying that everybody would know the Babylonian Empire fell.
No, so the way the commentaries seem to explain the pasuk is that there will come a period when the land will be filled with the knowledge of Hashem, people of Israel will return to being God-fearing people. And then, as a result of that, Hashem will punish the Babylonian Empire. Now, Hashem punished the Babylonian Empire. That happened. So it seems to indicate that there was a point of tshuva that the Jewish people did in their exile. And that point of tshuva is what brought it about. It doesn't seem like this is talking about something that's happening in the future. The way we're learning the prophecy is that this is talking about something that happened 45 years after the destruction of the temple. Or 58 years. You're talking about half a century after the destruction. The Babylonian Empire was taken down a half century later. That's when the Persian Mede Empire took over. So
Eretz here is referring to what again?
To the land of Israel. The land of Israel is often called Haaretz, or in modern Hebrew it's also that way.
So you're saying the Jews were left in Israel?
I don't think it means the Jews who were left in Israel. I think it means the Jews who are... who are called, who are named after, like the people of Israel, the land of Israel. So, Timalei Haaretz literally means the people of the land. The people of the land of Israel. Which is another way of saying the people of Israel. Look, this is a pshat that seems a little bit difficult to say in the words, but any other pshat is, I think, even more difficult, because at the end of the day, all of this happened already. So, what are you going to say? And I don't know if you're going to say Timalei Haaretz means all of humanity, all of Earth. That didn't happen either, not to the best of my knowledge. So I think that's a pshat that works, and we do find throughout Tanakh that Eretz is a reference to Eretz Israel, and the people of Israel are also named after that. But I don't know another pshat. I don't know another pshat we could say here. Says the Malbim learns over here that everyone heard about the writing of the wall in the time of Belshazzar, and everyone recognized the honor of Hashem is a reference to the fact that Hashem's honor was revealed when the angel came and wrote on the wall, and that it doesn't mean all of humanity, Timalei Haaretz, all of humanity heard, but it's a way of saying it became very, very famous. And that's what gave them the strength to wage another war and overtake the Babylonian Empire. That's what brought about the destruction of the Babylonian Empire. So historically, that's what it says in Yosifun, that the Babylonians had just won a tremendous battle against the Persian Medes, and that's why Belshazzar took out all the vessels of the Beit HaMikdash to celebrate in this feast, that he had just won this great war. In the middle of the feast, the hand appears and writes on the wall. And then when Daniel interprets the writing on the wall, he interprets it that the Babylonian Empire is going to fall. And when the Persian Medes get wind of what Daniel had said, that's what gives them the strength to attack that night. And that night they won the Babylonian Empire. Oh, okay. So that's the Malbim's proud over here.
That seems to fit.
Yeah, okay. Hashem, the land will fill the knowledge of Hashem, kamayim yichasu al hayam, just like the waters over the sea. That's the knowledge of Hashem, the honor of Hashem, which will appear then with the story of Belshazzar, and that will bring about your destruction, the destruction of the Babylonian Empire, the honor of Hashem, where Hashem takes vengeance, so to speak, for His honor, when you will use the vessels of the Beit HaMikdash. You understand that the difficulty with this is a little bit, is that you have to say, Timalei Haaretz doesn't really mean all of the land. Okay, we could swallow that. Kamayim yichasu al yam. Okay, again, you have to say, fine, I'm saying either pshat, you're going to have to kvetch a little bit. So, fine, I'm not sure, you know, fine. Now, the continuation of the prophecy, then the Seder Olam says, is about Belshazzar. The next verses, Chazal tell us, are about Belshazzar, that gave everyone to drink from the vessels of the temple. Hoy mashkei reyehu misapeh chamatcha ve'af shaker. Woe to the one who gives his friends to drink. And he's talking about He's giving them to drink in the vessels of the Beit HaMikdash, and in giving them to drink, Mesapeach HaMatcha, he's adding to the anger against him. Ve'af Shakir, and it's as though he's getting him drunk with anger. So to speak, he's getting Hashem very angry against him. Leman habit al me'oreyim, which ultimately will cause their private parts to be revealed, which is a reference on the simple level to what Nebuchadnezzar used to do, that he used to invite kings to his palace and give them a lot to drink, and he had a strong stomach, he could drink a lot and he wouldn't get drunk, and then they would go drunk and then he draped them, the Gemara says. That's what Nebuchadnezzar used to do. Leman habit al me'oreyim. The Medrash says that this is a reference to what Belshazzar did, that he gave his officers and everyone to drink from the vessels of the temple, and they, so to speak, got drunk with the anger of Hashem, which ultimately caused their private parts to be revealed, which is the shame that their enemies were able to overtake them in one night. They overtook the whole Babylonian Empire. Here they lost the battle, and then that night they overtook it. So Chazal tell us there was more to the story. There was one officer there who heard Daniel's prophecy, and that's why he had the courage. He said, why should I stand this side? Let me switch sides. And so he went and cut off Belshazzar's head. Chazal tell us that when Belshazzar heard Daniel's prophecy, he told everyone, he told all his guards, whoever you see walking around tonight, you kill. No one's allowed out in the palace. And then he had to go and get a drink, and they killed him. They saw him at night. They didn't know it was him. He said, anyone that's out, you killed. They killed. So there are different versions as to how exactly he was killed that night. But in the end, there was a fulfillment of Daniel's prophecy that all of that caused his downfall, the actual drinking of the wine there. Okay, we'll pick up here, Bezalel Hashem, next week.